Right now, it's time to join our friends up at the BerkshireEdge.com. They're there 24 hours a day. Well, the website is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They kind of feel like they're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The BerkshireEdge.com is where you can go to get a full look at what's going on South County and surrounding areas, and of course, coming events. And we always touch upon just a few of the topics here on a Wednesday morning. Good morning, Marcy, and good morning, David.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, we are here. It feels like 24 hours.
Well, yeah, well, I think today it was 24 hours.
Well, you know, it's funny.
We had almost no sleep last night.
People say to me all the time, you know, when I get in here, I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I sit at my home studio, and I put together stuff, get into the station by right around 5 o'clock, and I normally leave about 11, and people only think that I'm here from like 5 to 11.
11 then, in the morning?
Yeah, but then I get back home, and from 4 until 7 o'clock in the evening, I do more work at my home studio to set up. Mm-hmm. And if you're in media nowadays, those are the hours you work. You just work a lot of hours a day. But the good thing about what I do and what Jill does and what you do is we basically work for ourselves. So it's not like you're working for the man. you know what I mean?
No, it's true. And I must say that since we started The Edge, I was always a hard worker. I never worked so hard in my whole life as I do now. But there's something very satisfying.
That's exactly right.
When something goes well, you know, you really... You feel very good,
and you can make your decisions instantaneously on the fly.
Yes.
What you guys want to do, we do here. So,
there's no bureaucracy to check with.
We're like Muhammad Ali's. We float like butterflies and sting like bees.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
Yes.
We can adopt that as our motto.
Well, speaking about floating like butterflies, stinging like bees, not exactly an exciting annual town election in Great Barrington.
No.
No. You know, I read in the New York Times yesterday that people in New York are hardly even paying attention to the mayoral race there. But I think on the local level, we're having the same problem, that nobody's paying much attention to the local race. And it's next week. I mean, no, it's not next week. It's very soon. The town meeting is next week.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things.
So we have town meeting, and then we have the election.
Then we have the election,
yeah.
Right.
It's one of those things, though, like it appears to me that Andrew Yang is going to be the next mayor of New York, so we'll have to see how that goes.
Well, but
that's the problem nowadays. With COVID-19 and with all the responsibility that comes on local elected officials, this includes planning and zoning and everything, it's no longer like it used to be just good old small-town government, because people lawyer up. You know, it's a job that a lot of people now, they don't want to get involved in because of all the extracurricular stuff that you have to do.
Oh, it's a very hard job.
It takes a lot of time, and not everybody, you know, I think the town government that we have in New England, you know, is based on, you know, people working in town, you know, and so they're not out of town a lot. But times have, of course, changed since
and
then.
And also, local government has become much more complicated. I mean, this is set up in a kind of, you know, simpler agrarian society. But now we have all kinds of, you know, government regulations, and it's extremely time-consuming, and everybody has an opinion. It's a very hard job, and I'm amazed that anybody runs for it.
Right.
It's not that I'm amazed that nobody's paying any attention. I'm amazed that anybody wants the job. And now we have one seat up for re-election and two new people running against the incumbent.
Right.
And they've got lawn signs up all over town, and, you know, they're spending money on being... it's wonderful. I mean, I hope I don't sound like dismissive. I mean, I think it's wonderful that there are this many people who want to be involved, and, you know, we need to be very grateful to them.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a big commitment and it's unpaid. I think they get
a little small
stipend and some insurance.
Yeah.
Health insurance, but
it's the way it is.
Sufficient payment for the time that they have to put in.
So are you guys?
That's New England town meeting, though.
Right.
You know, it's a form of government that is in a way it works really well for us.
Well, it does work well for us, and it involves a lot of work. But in the end, the people who head up town government and work, they don't make the decisions. That's the great thing about this. The people
in the town meeting
makes the decision and approves everything that's been approved before by the selectmen and boards of finance. And so the people make the choice in the end. So it's a little convoluted, but you know what? It works. It really does work. It really does work. So
yes, and the government is really closely tied to the people, and that's important.
Yep. I want to go on to your next story because I don't know if the word toxins and water around our area will ever go away. You've got Mickey Friedman, an analyst of the cleanup of the toxins from Housatonic River, has written an analysis of the status of that campaign.
Oh yeah, this is a devastating article,
and
everyone should read it.
Yeah. Mickey has been following this story for decades. You know, this is the fight over removing polychlorinated biphenyls, which are proven to be a carcinogen, that were released into the river by the General Electric plant in Pittsfield for decades and decades and decades in the 30s and 40s and 50s.
Knowing full well what they were doing.
Yeah. And it just floated down, and it's a substance that does not break down. So it clings to the soil, and it's a dangerous substance in the sediment that's both on the banks of the rivers of the Housatonic and in the riverbed itself. So it's something that the EPA has finally got around to declaring a danger, and they've had it removed in Pittsfield. They had excavating the river, which was quite a chore, at General Electric's expense. But there's still some remaining PCBs that have, because even though they were dumped into the river, you know, many decades ago, they're just indestructible. So it's still prevalent in some of the down reaches of the Housatonic, like down in South Berkshire County and in Connecticut.
Well, I was going to say, this is a story that reaches everybody here in Connecticut,
yes,
because the Housatonic only gets stronger and bigger the further south you go. And like you say, just imagine, you know, they say at a nuclear power plant, the radiation in the rods that they have to take out last 100. Well, PCBs are every bit as dangerous as that. They are
and as long lasting.
Yeah, they just don't go away, and they're every bit as dangerous as nuclear waste. I sometimes think people lose that sight of PCBs. I mean, when you have a transformer explode outside your house, when you see them come replace it, it's almost like
they're in hazmat suits.
Yeah, that's how dangerous. And PCBs are in things like that. They're all over the place. And one place you don't want them is your river.
Not only that, but you also don't want them taken out and put in landfills.
Yeah.
In your town, where they will eventually leach right back right into the groundwater.
Well, let's not, you know, PCBs or polychlorinated biphenyls were a great boon to the electrical transmission business, because it's a coolant for the transformers that are up on poles that people can see, those big cylindrical devices on the top of poles that allow the current to be stepped down from high voltage to voltage that it goes into the houses, and it's a great coolant. However, it's a carcinogen.
Well, it's like
serious.
Asbestos was great for the break in and for the linoleum and for the tiling industry many, many years ago, and we found out, wow, you know, this is really not good stuff.
No.
Yeah, you shouldn't breathe it.
It's pretty amazing, and when you talk about future generations, people tend to poo-poo the idea as well. Why do you talk about my kids and my grandkids? Well, here's a very good reason. PCBs. I was a teenager when they first started talking about it. I'm now 68 years old, and it's still not settled.
Right.
So. Well, it was an amazing very damaging environmental hazard. It is still. And they've removed a good amount of it from around the river in Pittsfield. But it floated downstream, and it's still embedded to some degree in the riverbeds.
And even when the riverbeds are cleaned up, like Marcy was saying, you're still going to have those PCBs in landfills in these towns. And
the argument right now, and what people in Lee, for example, are very upset about is that. They're not going the full measure. Okay. So they want to sort of take it out of the river and put it in a landfill. Mickey is saying that the solution is capricious, cheap, and possibly illegal.
Yeah.
So and the only way to fight it at this point may be to take it to federal court, which is a very expensive proposal. And GE has the money
to do it. That's exactly right.
And the towns don't.
Yeah. Well, I want to go on to your next topic because Sharon has decided to invest $30,000 in engineering here in Sharon with the Sharon Broadband Committee to see exactly what it might cost, what needs to be done to bring high-speed internet access. Now, we do have Comcast, and we have 1 gig service here at the station, but not everybody throughout these rural towns has that. And you've got a story on Egremont becoming the latest town. They're trying to adopt plans to bring high-speed internet access to the to people. There's a lot
to
of things.
Everyone. Yeah, they had it already to a significant number of people. But now they want to bring it to everyone,
right?
Which is, they want to extend it all the way through Egremont, and that is really amazing.
Yeah, well, it used to be. I mean, when this, years ago, it used to be, internet was considered a kind of luxury item, but now it's absolutely essential.
And as the pandemic proves, if you don't have internet, you can't. You can't participate.
The question is how to in our rural areas is the best because it's hilly. The best way is to bring it in on to string a line on the poles that so people can have a very high speed connection right to their house, so they're not depending on a Wi-Fi broadcast. And but this is all the great Berkshire towns, as well as other towns in the New England, are trying to take advantage of.
Because it's so expensive to do what they call the last mile. I mean, every town has high speed internet coming into it. Deval Patrick's administration made sure that happened, so it goes into a hub in each town, but. The expense is getting it what they call the last mile, which may be the last many miles in these towns that have sparse population who are very far apart. So it's but Egremont, is doing it with a company called Fiber Connect, which is local here in the Berkshires that has already wired the downtown of Great Barrington. And boy, I wish that we could have it at our house.
Well,
we have we have Spectrum, but this is going to be so much better.
Well, it's coming also in the future, and you know, I have. I'm one of the beta testers. I'll be receiving my Starlink equipment within the next month or two and install it. And the more satellites they put up, the better it's going to get. And I'm going to report back to the Sharon Commission. I'm already reporting to them how my 1G Comcast service is working. But when I install Starlink at my house, it might, things like this, you know, affect radio stations like us who need to communicate to our various transmitters. So we're exploring all those options. And I just think the town of Sharon's doing it the right way, setting aside some engineering money, $30,000, to see exactly what it would cost to wire the town. So it's a problem that towns are going to have to solve if they want to keep having people move into their towns.
Well, you know, it's similar to when they strung the telephone lines, you know, years ago.
Or the electric lines.
The electric lines. It's become essential that, you know, for everybody now.
All right, now we got to go on to COVID-19 and the
value. Oh, do we have to talk about that?
The value of vaccinations. I was just talking with my meteorologist this morning, and basically what I told him, I said, listen, if you've got vaccinated and you've got your two shots and you're 2 weeks out, or you got your one J&J shot and you're 2 weeks out, you know what? Just carry a mask with you, and if you feel uncomfortable, put it on. You know, it's one of those things that you can no longer worry about people who don't want to get vaccinated. You just have to do what's good for you, you know, basically.
Yeah, well, and they're not doing what's good for themselves or for anybody else.
Yeah. But, you know,
people who defy the mask requirement
You know, Connecticut's going to get rid of the in stores, going to give stores the options whether or not to let people get closer together or not. But they're not getting rid of the mask option in stores. But this is
restaurants.
But this is going to be something that's going to slowly develop over the next year, and the mask debate is only going to get worse. It really
is. Yes, it is. No, because. Now we're down to, I mean, everybody who want, or not everybody, but almost everybody who wants to be vaccinated. Now, I mean, if you're 16 or over, you now have access. But, and the reports all indicate that the number of vaccines being given has slowed down, because now we're into those people who are reluctant or resistant or determined not to. So, you know, we have a problem. I mean, this virus is going to stay alive in those people, and it's going to be dangerous for the rest of us.
Yeah.
It's one of those stories that, once again, we'll be following for a while. We only have about 5 minutes left, and there's something I want to talk to you about, and then it is number five. And the first thing, are you guys anticipating and waiting for the vote count today up at Mass MoCA?
That's right.
They're counting they're video counting, showing each. It's really a complicated process. But you know what? We talked about nonprofits and the pay inequity. This decision, whatever happens up there, could have a big effect
in
South County.
Union decision. Right.
Yeah, the union. Whether they will be unionized.
Yeah.
Or not.
It's got some pretty ramifications, so I can't wait to see your story on that. Now we can go on to your agricultural desk, and Berkshire farmers have adapted to the pandemic conditions.
This is the farm desk.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's how the farmers are adapting to the pandemic. That's what this story is about.
Yeah.
And you know, as our writer says, the farmers are terrifically resilient. But, you know, on the other hand, they need to go to market, too. And so they're trying to maintain this kind of farm-to-market access, but at the same time, you know, keep themselves safe. And that's what our story's about.
And they've done it amazingly well. You know, they have, not over the dead of winter, but even in the dead of winter, the Berkshire Grown has continued to have its winter farmers markets. But But also, I mean, the farmers have been selling right from their farms, which is unusual. You know, and we wonder what's going to happen in the next, you know, this next summer, whether they'll continue to do that, because it's probably easier for them to just sell right from their farms than to have to transport it. But it, you know, we have so many wonderful farms around here.
We have a really vigorous kind of farmers market culture here,
and farm to table culture.
Yeah,
you know, which really, you know, I mean, we are one of the originating points of the farm to table movement here in Great Barrington. But you know, there are a number of organizations that support farmers. I mean, there is Berkshire Grown, which is promoting farmers and their produce, but there's also Agricultural Ventures, which makes loans available. It's a very interesting organization that makes loans available to farmers, you know, because the hardest part is getting financing, especially at the beginning of the season when you don't have much collateral left. So, and we have a lot of CSAs where people can invest in local farms by buying the produce up front and giving the farmers money. So this is a really, I mean, this is a very interesting area, and there are a lot of things going on. But we are saving our farmers.
Well,
and they are saving themselves, actually.
Well, they're ingenious, and they,
yes,
work, and they work so hard.
And necessity is the mother of invention. So, you know, they are working hard.
It's not just that they're farmers. It's now agribusiness, really. They really have come up with ways, because the family farms, it just doesn't hand down anymore from generation to generation. But the people that are excited about local agriculture, local farming, local, as you say, farm to table, are what's rescuing this. And then the other people that follow up with the farmers markets and everything like that, it all works together to keep farming a major part of our communities.
Well, it does. And, you know, we have to mention some local outlets like the Co-op and Guido's that insist on,
buying
from local farmers that sustain many of the farmers in our area, you know. And you can be guaranteed that the food is safe and fresh.
Yeah.
You know. So, in fact, that's where we go.
That's right. Yes, I mean, it's a lot easier than growing our own, which...
farming.
But, you know, the farmers have, you know, they have, I mean, in this past year, they've developed online sales processes. They've developed new businesses, like
all the
microgreens and vermicompost, that they're selling. I mean, they've been very resourceful.
And everything that they've developed during this pandemic will only ensure their success in the future.
Yes.
That's the one good thing about this. Well,
yes.
We are out of time exactly once again. Once again, we only touch upon a few stories that you'll find at theberkshireedge.com, and of course their great calendar that has a great listing of all events coming up in the area. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Okay, Marshall, have a good one.
Take care.
Bye.
Yep.
TheBerkshireEdge.com, once again on the web, and you'll find them here on a Wednesday morning on Robin Hood Radio. Also online, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand, click on This Week in Berkshire Edge.